This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. The U.S. Open Golf Tournament begins on June 16th in the town of Pinehurst, North Carolina. It'll be the golf gala's first return to the course since 1999. This year, beyond the breeze of the backswings and the smell of the honeysuckle, the air will be filled with the music of Terry Mazzesco. Terry plays the bass trombone in the North Carolina Symphony Orchestra and composes. His original piece, Sketches from Pinehurst, premieres tonight in Southern Pines at Lee Auditorium and on Saturday night at Maymandy Hall in Raleigh. The performances will be conducted by Grant Llewellyn, the North Carolina Symphony's popular resident conductor, and Terry Mazzesco and Grant Llewellyn join me in the studio now. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Terry, now you're from Moorhead City, and you went to East Carolina, and they're in the same state as Pinehurst, but that's where the similarity ends. How did you come to compose for a place like Pinehurst?
The idea came from Scott Freck, who's our assistant vice president in charge of artistic production. He's a musician. He plays the cello and the piano as well as an administrator, and he likes golf. And he knew that the U.S. Open was coming back to Pinehurst in 2005. He also knew, this is a long story, but I'll try to condense it. He knew that Lynn Harrell was one of our soloists this year, and Lynn Harrell's a very athletic person. Mm-hmm. He used to play a lot of tennis, and in years past, if the orchestras gave him a good tennis deal while he was there, he gave them a good rate on his solo fee. Uh-huh. And now he's a little older, and his game has changed from tennis to golf. So Scott started thinking, Lynn Harrell, Pinehurst, blah, blah, blah. And he got to think, boy, it would be nice to have a piece written for this venue. And he happens to like my music. And so he approached me about writing a piece, not for Lynn Harrell, but for the U.S. Open in 2005 for Pinehurst.
So it's a little bit about the athletics, but also about Pinehurst. I mean, that's an interesting place with quite a history. Tell us a little about Pinehurst.
Well, it's really a community. It's not really even a town that grew out of a man's dream. This man was James Tufts, who invented the soda fountain. He lived in Boston, and he had chronic health problems, especially in the winter. So he wanted a place to spend the winters, and he looked all over the states and found the climate in southeastern Sandhills to his liking. And he went there and purchased about 600 acres of land with the intent of making a kind of a resort place to spend, or for many people to spend their winters there. I was there with Scott Freck a little over a year ago, and I was at the library, the archives there, and there's a map, a pen and pencil map of the county, Moore County, and there's this little rectangular square, and that was the 600 acres that he bought, and there's a few dots in there, maybe a dozen. So I asked the librarian, what are those dots? She says, oh, those are the trees that were left standing when he bought the land.
When he bought the land, because that's a big part of the story, is that this place had been pine forest, raised to the ground for...
Right, and naval stores for turpentine and pitch and tar, and, you know, they would gouge the trees, get the resin out each year, and when there was no more resin, they would cut the trees down and use it for timber.
So then it gets reconstructed and becomes, again, a kind of a natural beauty, but it's one that's, in a sense, man-made.
And that's what I was trying, and part of what I was trying to do is to show how one man's dream took what man had basically raped and built it into something else that we can really appreciate, although very different from what, you know, our creator had made in the first place. Yeah.
Grant Llewellyn, what's it like to conduct a piece and have the composer standing over your shoulder and also in front of you? You've got the composer.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I have to say that I think conducting new music where you have the opportunity to work with the composer is about the most fun you get as a conductor. At least that's my opinion. You know, it's the closest to the coal face that we conductors ever get. You know, our art is a recreative art, and, you know, to get up close and personal with the real flesh and blood composer, to whom you obviously have a great responsibility. In some ways, it's a scarier experience, but it's ultimately the most rewarding experience. Now, to have Terry also in the orchestra, right. That's going to be a fairly new experience for me. I'm not sure that I can recall a situation quite like this. I would like to think that, from Terry's point of view as well, because we're working so closely together and with all of our colleagues in the symphony orchestra, there's a good degree of flexibility that, you know, if he decides to change anything, we're there to do it. And, you know, we can still play the music even when it's still wet on the page.
So, aside from the obvious difference, you have the composer to talk it over with. You can make the changes. Do you approach an original work differently than one that's been done, thousands of times before? You're sort of having to live down or live up to, I guess, a history of those classical pieces.
Well, yes, in that sense, this obviously has no performance tradition, this piece, and so that does give you, perhaps a greater freedom, but also a greater responsibility. And I would like to think that I approach Terry's work, the Sketches from Pinehurst, in exactly the same way as I would approach Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, in that, I start with the score, and I try and be as faithful and as loyal to the composer's intention as much as I can understand them. Of course, I have the luxury of being able to ask Terry, sadly, Beethoven wasn't available, so I couldn't compare notes. But really, I start from the same standpoint, which is faithfulness to the score. And then, of course, I will consult with Terry on details.
But the notion of fidelity, Terry, you've composed other pieces. Is it your sense as a composer that this is something a conductor needs to be faithful to? They need to find out what you were thinking? Or is this a piece that, how do you interpret this? Here goes my baby, it's off on its own. What do people think?
Well, I like, it's my baby, but I'm not the one that's showing it to the public. He is. Plus, it's his orchestra. And I feel adamantly that a composer has to know what the composer's intent was, but he has to go on his own musical instincts, not only from a history of his own musical upbringing, but also of the moment, of the performance moment. So I like to leave a lot of that up to the maestro.
Tell us about the sketches. It sounds like there are a number of short pieces. Is that right? How is it laid out?
There are five. Mm-hmm. The first is called The Dream, and it really is about Tuft's dream, but it opens with a very sparse setting, much like the Sand Barrens, which is what they called the land that Tuft's bought. And you will then hear a motive horn signal from the French horn that you hear a couple of other times, and then a motto theme from the upper strings that you hear in several different movements in different guises. And the second movement is called Building the Community. And what I tried to do in this movement was to show 50 years of building this community cut down to 5 minutes. I wanted to show the energy involved, and I also wanted to, of course, you want to have it very energetic anyway. You want to have some variety in your music, slow, fast, mm-hmm. soft, loud, that thing. But I got my idea from this little frenetic energy that you hear in the strings. If you've ever seen old newsreel footage where the man who was taking the pictures had a handheld camera,
right.
And it cranked it,
mm-hmm.
And if he cranked it too slow, and if it was shown back in the theaters, the people were moving very fast. That's that was the other thing I was trying to show, all these people kind of like worker ants moving real fast. The third movement is called The Golden Years. Aside from being a resort, a golf resort, it's also a retirement community, mm-hmm. and this is what this name comes from. And I wanted to show really relationships between people who have left their homes of 20 or 30 years and careers and come down. And to me, I like this movement the best. It's not the most complicated, but it says the most. Maybe it's because I'm 58 and I'm not looking to retirement, but it's something that is very meaningful to me. The fourth movement is I call Rumble on the Back Nine, and it is the only one that has...
That's the golf stuff?
That's the golf. When I was first approached by Scott Freck to write this piece, word gets out in the orchestra, and people are coming up, "All right, how are you going to show a golf ball in motion?" You know, well, I'm not. What I wanted to do in this was a couple of things. First of all, the melody in it has a Scottish flavor, because the game came from Scotland, and the courses were designed by a Scotsman, Donald Ross. But above that, and sometimes below that, I have this rhythmic figure. Now, golf is an athletic event, and most athletic competitions, the people involved have adrenaline. And in most of them, you can release. Mm-hmm. The maestro plays rugby, and you run and you throw and you hit. In golf, you cannot do this.
That's
you have to control. You still have the adrenaline, but you have to control it. And I don't play golf. I was on a golf course twice, once by accident. But what I related this to was a day of auditions. That you would have where you had to play maybe two or three or four rounds. This adrenaline is always there, and it's always getting more and more intense, and you have to find a way to play with it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I never thought about that, but in both cases, you've got, all this energy, and you've got to control your breath, I guess, in both cases. You're not breathing right in golf, I understand. Right. I've never heard golf and rugby used in the same sentence before, so we've broken new ground again, but that's great. So now we're on the fourth.
Fifth movement is called Lament and Finale, and the 1999 Open was held in Pinehurst as well. And we all remember Payne Stewart's when he made this 18-foot putt on the last hole to win. But what I remember was his untimely death 3 months later, and that is where this comes from. Mm-hmm. And it is a very poignant lament. But it changes into a very grand finale, because we all have losses in life, and it's not the losses that we have to grieve those losses and then get on with, because a person's death is not what we should remember. We should remember the things that they gave us, the friendships, the gifts that they had, things like that. So and in the finale, you will hear motives that you've heard previously in a different guise or fabric.
So. When you sit down to write, how much of the inspiration comes from the narrative, the story, and how much of it comes from the landscape? Did you have to go back and visit the place or wander the course?
No, I just did. I made one visit there. Now, I've been to Pinehurst many times. We've played there five or six times a year, at least in the last 15 years. But as far as seeing the golf area, the resort itself, last year was the only time. I met some wonderful people while I was there, and I saw a croquet course. Do they call it a course?
Yes.
For the first time in my life, with the guys in the white uniforms, I guess, and that was interesting. I'd never seen that.
Didn't know they had that there. Didn't know they had that there.
Yes, it's a golf and croquet. That's in the title. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Grant, I guess you can conduct this with your putter, right? You could.
Well, if I owned a putter, if I knew one end of a putter from the other, I probably could. Whilst I love sports, I've enjoyed golf as a spectator, and I've been on a couple of golf courses, I really can't claim to be a golfer yet.
That does raise an interesting question, though, I guess, about how one interprets a work if they're not particularly familiar with, or let's say you're not particularly interested in the subject, but there's something probably inherent in there that you can draw on and then interpret.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's my responsibility to wear many hats, many costumes. And so, for the purposes of this piece, I absolutely have to become a golfer. When I'm conducting that fourth movement, I'm playing every hole on the back nine, and you can be sure I'm birdieing a few. I really do feel a responsibility to sort of get into the skin of the people there, and through talking to Terry, over the last few months, I too have got a feel and sympathy, I think, for the whole area and the history, and I just can't wait to see it.
Terry, we're going to hear a lot of bass trombone in these pieces.
You'll hear some. It's actually, as far as the brass, it's more a horn piece. Uh-huh. There are significant solos for principal horn.
You've shown great restraint.
Absolutely. The bass trombone is a lethal weapon. You use it sparingly.
Now, you talked about the adrenaline, the sort of athleticism that that's reflected that way. Will we at any point, you know, can we hear the ball whizzing through the air?
Absolutely not. You will not do that. I made it. I hesitated to even be as descriptive, as specifically descriptive as I've been, because sometimes it's better to let, you know, the audience make their own up their own mind on this. But no, you definitely will never.
We don't have to duck. Nobody else has to duck.
No, nothing else for it.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Great pleasure.
Terry Mazzesco plays bass trombone with the North Carolina Symphony Orchestra, which is conducted by Grant Llewellyn. Terry's piece, Sketches from Pinehurst, premieres tonight at Southern Pines at Lee Auditorium at 8 p.m. and on Saturday night at May Mandy Hall in Raleigh, also at 8. That's the state of things for today. Thanks for listening. If you have a comment about the show, drop us an email here at sot@wunc.org. Support for the state of things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Frank Stachow.